Assalamu alaikum students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University and Mubashir Humayun, welcome to another lecture in Financial Management. Today we're going to continue our discussion of capital structure, and specifically we will be talking about operating leverage, financial leverage, and we will discuss the concepts related to the return on equity, break-even points, and business risk. At the close of the last lecture, we spoke about business risk, which is composed of the two aspects, which cover both the company-specific as well as the market-related risk. We mentioned that the standalone risk of a business is equal to the business risk plus the financial risk. And for the time being, we are focusing on the business risk portion, and we are talking about operating leverage. I mentioned that operating leverage is the impact of a small change in the sales on the return on equity, or ROE. In other words, a small decrease in the sales can lead to a very large decrease in the ROE. And this is the concept of leverage. Operating leverage is defined as the fixed costs divided by the total costs. Now, there are certain industries that are more prone to high operating leverage. These are industries that are capital intensive, like power plants, cement plants, textile mills. And also, in the technology sector, you can have companies that are high in operating leverage because they employ highly skilled people. Now, today we are going to take a look at the sensitivity of the return on equity to changes in the sales. You will recall that we mentioned that we can use the return on equity as a measure of the overall return of a firm. In the case of a 100% equity firm, the ROE is a measure of the overall return, and any changes or variation in the ROE is a measure of the risk for that firm. Now, the first concept within operating leverage that we will talk about is break-even. Break-even is actually a concept from microeconomics and financial accounting, and quite simply, the break-even represents the quantity of sales at which your operating revenues will exactly cover your operating costs. So, in other words, the break-even point is a point at which the EBIT, or earnings before interest and taxation, is equal to zero. Now, when we talk about the EBIT, loosely speaking, we are saying that it is equal to the operating revenue minus the operating cost. The operating cost can be divided into two components. Operating cost is equal to the variable costs plus the fixed costs. Variable costs are those costs that move up and down with the changes in sales and output, and fixed costs are those that remain relatively fixed. What are the examples of fixed costs? Well, they include things like the utility bills, electricity bills, and it includes other fixed costs in the nature of rental payments for the factory or warehouse, and so on. Variable costs are those costs, for example, the cost of raw materials and factors of production, that move up and down depending on the level of sales. So let us refresh the financial accounting definition of the operating revenue and the costs. Operating revenue is simply equal to the price of a product multiplied by the quantity or the number of units sold. The variable costs are equal to the quantity of the product sold multiplied by V, which represents the variable cost for one particular product or unit. And the fixed costs can be simply represented by F. They do not change depending on the quantity of sales. So then the formula for the EBIT is equal to operating revenue minus operating cost, and that is equal to PQ minus VQ minus F. And we know that at the break-even point, we define the break-even point as the point at which the operating revenues equal to the operating costs. In other words, where the EBIT is equal to zero. Therefore, if we set the EBIT equal to zero and solve the equation, we will find that the Q is equal to F divided by P minus V. And that is the point or the number of units at which the company will break even. The company has to produce a minimum number of units equal to the break-even quantity in order to meet its operating costs. So, for example, if this company is producing fabric and its break-even is 10,000 meters of fabric, then it means that the company needs to produce at least 10,000 meters of fabric in order for its revenues to cover its total costs. And this is a very important question that businessmen ask themselves is, what is the break-even point? How much do we need to produce and sell in order to cover our costs? Now, the reason why I went into break-even is because changes in operating leverage will have an impact and a change in the break-even quantity. And changes in operating leverage will also have a change in the likelihood or the chances of the company making a greater loss. And we can see this and understand it best if we take a look at the diagram. So if we take a look at the slide, you'll get a better understanding of the sensitivity and the impact of small changes in sales on the ROE and on the break-even point. So if we take a look at the slide, you will see that the operating leverage has been graphed. On the y-axis, we have the revenues and costs in rupees, and on the x-axis, the sales quantity in the number of units. First of all, if you take a look at the line that is passing through the origin, that represents the sales revenue line. And then I have graphed the total cost lines for the two different technologies. Technology A is represented by the line that is higher up, and technology B is represented by the cost line that is lower and that has a higher slope. So let's take a visual look at the operating leverage on the graph. On the y-axis, you will see the revenues and costs in rupees, and on the x-axis, the sales quantity in terms of the number of units. The slope line that passes through the origin is the sales revenue line, and this represents the revenue, which is equal to P times Q, or price times quantity. Then I have shown two other lines. The line that is higher up represents the total cost line for technology A, which has the higher operating leverage, and the lower line below it represents the total cost line for technology B. Now, there are two important consequences to note. So, for technology A, the fixed costs are higher, and therefore it has a higher operating leverage, assuming that the total costs are representative of the lines that have been shown on the graph. Now, the impact that technology A, with the higher operating leverage, has on the EBIT is as follows. If you take a look at the left-hand side of this graph, you will see that for technology A, it has a larger operating loss. Now, operating loss because the total cost is higher than the sales revenue. And this is why we say that businesses, projects, or technologies with higher operating leverages are more risky, because there's more chance that they will incur an operating loss because their fixed costs remain high. The other point to note in this graph is that as the operating leverage increases, for example, in this case, technology A has a higher operating leverage, then the break-even point also increases. In other words, the amount of sales that a company needs to make in order to recover its costs also goes up. So there are two ways that the operating leverage impacts the level of risk for a company. So we can visualize the effect of operating leverage on the cost versus sales graph. And there are two major effects of operating leverage. One is that higher operating leverage means a greater reduction in the EBIT. In other words, higher operating leverage means a greater chance of operating loss. And secondly, higher operating leverage shifts the break-even point to the right. In other words, it increases the minimum number of units that need to be sold in order for a company to cover its total cost. Now, we have just spoken about the effect of operating leverage on capital budgeting. And that is because operating leverage affects the EBIT, or earnings before interest and taxation. Therefore, operating leverage, when it is higher, means that the chances are that the ROE can fall more drastically. Therefore, companies with higher operating leverage have higher risk, and therefore the required rate of return is higher, the discount rate that we use in the net present value formula is higher, and therefore our value for NPV that we calculate for these high operating leverage companies will be lower. This is why operating leverage affects the capital budgeting process. So operating leverage also affects the capital structure. And how is that? Well, simply because companies with higher operating leverage or technologies that have higher operating leverage have higher risk. And that means that they have higher betas associated with them, higher required rate of returns, and therefore higher WACCs, or higher weighted average cost of capital. Another way to look at it is that companies with higher operating leverage also have a greater chance of operational loss. Therefore, their EBITs can reduce or fall more drastically, and therefore they have higher risks attached to them. Once again, this means that they will have higher required rate of returns, and therefore they will have higher weighted average cost of capital. Now, if we say that the companies with higher operating leverage have higher risks, then by the same token, we should also realize that these companies with higher operating leverage also raise the average expected rate of return. And this is because, so companies with higher operating leverage have higher risk. But by the same token, companies with higher operating leverage also have a higher average overall rate of return, if we measure that in the form of return on equity. Why is that? Because so far we've only been talking about the case where a company is operating on the left-hand side of the break-even point. But if the company's sales are higher than the break-even point, then companies with higher operating leverage will give you a higher EBIT or higher earnings. Therefore, the overall effect of operating leverage has to consider both the higher risk as well as the higher return provided by companies with higher operating leverage. And we can take a look simultaneously at the impact on risk and return from the slide that you will take a look at next. If we take a look at the slide, we can visualize the effect of operating leverage, or OL, on the risk and the return of a particular technology. On the graph, you will see probability on the y-axis and the return on equity, or ROE, on the x-axis. Now, I have shown two probability distributions. One of them is the probability distribution on the left, which is a tall, sharp peak that represents technology B with the lower operating leverage. This shows that technology B has lower risk and also lower mean or average ROE. The other probability distribution, which is to the right-hand side and is shorter and flatter, is that of technology A. This technology has the higher operating leverage, it has higher risk, and higher average or mean ROE. It also has the higher weighted average cost of capital because it has a higher required rate of return. Now, recall from our talk on the probability distribution and risk theory that we can visualize risk as the amount of spread or range or width of the probability distribution curve, and you will note that technology A has a shorter and flatter curve, which shows that it is more risky. You will also note that the mean or average expected ROE for technology A is to the right-hand side of that for technology B, which means that the technology with the higher operating leverage also offers the higher mean or expected return on equity. So, as I close up the portion on operating leverage, let me just mention that you should be absolutely clear in your mind regarding the difference between ROE and required rate of return. Please don't confuse the two, because ROE is a financial accounting ratio which is simply equal to the net income divided by the total equity. And you will recall from our discussion on share valuation that we used ROE to calculate the growth rate in the Gordon's formula and also the PVGO, present value of growth opportunities, in the earnings formula for calculating share price. However, the required rate of return is determined by the investor's risk return preference and the market. And we used the results from the capital asset pricing model to formulate the answer for the required rate of return in terms of the risk premium and the beta. You should also not confuse the return on assets, or ROA, with the weighted average cost of capital. The ROA is a financial ratio which is equal to the total return divided by the total assets, and it can be calculated from the financial statements, whereas the weighted average cost of capital is determined by the market combination of risk and return and the investor's risk return preference. So the required rate of return and the weighted average cost of capital to a certain degree are financial management ratios, whereas the ROE and the ROA are financial accounting ratios. Let us now shift our attention from business risk to financial risk. And I mentioned that standalone risk for a company has these two components. Financial risk is risk that is created and caused by debt. And we mentioned that when a company increases its debt, then it increases the amount of risk for the common stockholders. And I mentioned that, for example, if a company is 100% equity based and if it has total assets of 1,000 rupees and then it decides that it wants to reduce half of its equity and replace it by debt, then the company would buy back 500 shares and replace them with 500 rupees worth of debt. Now the company would have 500 rupees of debt and 500 rupees of equity. So 500 rupees of this company's capital would be owned by the stockholders and 500 rupees would be owned by the debt holders or the investors in debt. Now what impact does it have on risk? Well, the business risk of the company we are assuming is still the same at least. Therefore, now there are half as many shares across which the risk will be distributed. Therefore, the shareholders will have to bear twice as much risk. This is because the debt holders will bear almost no risk. They're guaranteed an interest payment or markup, and they also have the first claim on the assets in the event that the company goes bankrupt. So when a company takes on debt, it increases the level of risk for its shareholders. So now let's take a look at financial leverage. Financial leverage is basically the extent or the degree to which a company's total capital is composed of debt. So a company whose capital is 80 or 90% debt is very, very highly leveraged. We mentioned that the debt will have an impact on the overall risk of the company. Now, let's see what happens when a company that converts half of its equity into debt and how its balance sheet will change as a result. So if you take a look at the slide, then you will see the impact of debt or financial leverage on the balance sheet of a company that has moved from being a 100% equity company to a company that is 50% equity and 50% debt. The impact of financial leverage or a loan or debt on the balance sheet is as follows. On the left-hand side, you will see the balance sheet of an unlevered or a 100% equity company. The assets of this company are 1,000 rupees and the liability of this company is 1,000 rupees also. Assets have to equal liabilities. And of course, because it is 100% equity, the total liabilities are equal to equity, which is equal to 1,000 rupees. Now let's see what happens to this same company if the management decides to replace half of the equity with debt. Now, again, the total assets we assume are 1,000 rupees and the total liabilities are also 1,000 rupees, but the equity has decreased by half, so now the equity is 500 rupees and the debt is also 500 rupees. So this is the change in the capital structure that you are seeing in the unlevered firm it is 100% equity. And for the levered firm, which has taken on debt, it is 50% equity and 50% debt. Now, I mentioned earlier that the debt has an impact on the return on equity of a company. And we also mentioned that debt has an impact on the extent of the changes or sensitivity that takes place in the return on equity given any small change in the earnings or in the sales. So now we need to take a look at the impact of financial leverage or debt on the profit and loss statement or the income statement of a company. Let us take a look at the slide which will show to us how by taking on debt a company can actually improve its overall return on equity even though its risk is also increasing. The impact of financial leverage or debt or a loan on the income statement is as follows. We will take a look at the case of a company when it is 100% equity or unlevered, and then we will take a look at the same company if it replaces 50% of its equity with debt. So in both cases, the expected earnings before interest and taxation or EBIT is 300 rupees. In the case of the levered company, it has taken a debt and therefore it has to pay interest. Let's assume that the interest is 10% and the debt is 500 rupees. So the interest payment for the levered company is 50 rupees. Next, we can calculate the earnings before taxation or EBT. That is equal to EBIT minus interest. And you will note that the EBT for the unlevered company is 300 rupees and for the levered company is 250 rupees. Finally, the company has to pay 30% corporate tax on the earnings before taxation. In the case of the unlevered company, that's equal to 90 rupees, and for the levered company, it's 75 rupees. So the net income for the unlevered company is 210 rupees, and for the levered company, it is 175 rupees. Now we can calculate the return on equity or ROE, and that's equal to the net income divided by the equity. So that is equal to 21% for the unlevered company and 35% for the levered company. So what we are saying is that debt can actually improve the return on equity. You will see that the return on equity has increased from 21% to 35% because the company has taken on debt. Also note that when the company took on more debt, it also increased the total return to the investors. The total return is the net income plus interest, and that increased from 210 rupees to 225 rupees. So, if increasing the level of debt improves the ROE and it also improves the total rate of return to the investors, then why is debt considered bad? The answer is simple, because the debt increases the level of risk. And we have to look not just at the return that we have looked at just now, but also at the impact of debt on risk. So how does increasing the debt in a company increase the level of risk? Firstly, when a company increases its debt, then it also increases the amount of interest or debt servicing that it needs to make, and therefore it reduces its net income. And if its sales revenue drops, then the chances are that the company will not be able to service. So debt increases the level of risk, because when a company takes on more debt, then it has to make fixed regular interest payments, whether or not the company is making an operational profit or loss. And if the sales decrease, then the chances are that the company may not be able to service its debt. And therefore, there's a greater chance of an overall loss. So that was one way in which a company can increase its level of risk if its debt increases. The second reason why debt can increase the level of risk in a company is that when the percentage of debt in the total capital of a company rises, then it creates greater uncertainty in the future return on equity for the shareholders. So what this means is that when the level of debt in a company increases, it increases the level of risk faced by the shareholders. Now, if we go back to the formula for the total standalone risk for a company or a firm, we said that that is equal to the business risk plus the financial risk. Now, the standalone risk in total for a firm is simply equal to the standard deviation of the ROE for a levered firm, assuming that the firm is levered and has both debt and equity in its capital. And the business risk can be defined now as the standard deviation of the ROE for an unlevered firm, in other words, a firm with 100% equity. Therefore, we can now calculate the financial risk as the difference between the total standalone risk and the business risk. Now, the impact of financial leverage is similar to the impact of operating leverage. In the case of operating leverage, we mentioned that a small change in the sales can lead to a very, very large change in the return on equity, or it can lead to a very large change in the operating losses and a large change in the break-even point. And therefore, because of this leverage effect or amplifying effect, if the financials of a company are not strong, then for highly leveraged companies with high operating leverage, there is a greater chance of loss. Now, in the case of financial leverage, what we are saying is that a small change in the EBIT can lead to a very, very large change in the ROE of the company. So, we can visualize the financial leverage in a similar way that we did for the case of operating leverage. And I'd like to show to you the slides that demonstrate the effect of financial leverage, and then in the next lecture we will explain in detail what the graphs actually mean and how the graphs are derived. If you take a look at the first slide, it shows to you how you can visualize financial leverage on a graph of ROE versus EBIT. ROE is shown as a percentage on the y-axis and EBIT is shown on the x-axis in terms of rupees. You will note that if a company is levered or it has both debt and equity, then it is represented by the line with the higher slope, the steeper line, and it means that the ROE is more sensitive to changes in EBIT, because you will see that for the same range of EBIT, which is from 50 to 600 rupees, the Y values or the ROE has a much larger range, extending from 0% to 77%. Whereas for the case of the unlevered company, which is 100% equity, it has a much smaller slope and it has a smaller range of future ROE values. And that range is only from 3.5% to 42%. Also note that when we are talking about a company whose sales are low and whose EBIT is low, then the unlevered firm represents a much safer capital structure than the levered firm. But when the EBIT of a company is healthy and it is high, then the levered firm offers the higher ROE. Now, if you take a look at the next slide, then you will see that we can visualize the effect of financial leverage based on our probability distribution diagrams, just as we did for the case of operating leverage. Now, here you can see that probability is graphed on the y-axis and required, or rather the return on equity, is graphed on the x-axis. And you will note that the sharper and taller probability distribution represents the case of the unlevered or 100% equity firm. It has the lower average ROE, but it also has the lower risk as measured by the width or the spread of the distribution curve. Also note that for the case of the levered firm, if it has taken on debt as well as equity, it has a higher average ROE, but it also has a higher risk, and that is shown by the shorter, flatter distribution curve. So we will talk more about these graphs in the following lecture when we talk about financial leverage, and then move on to the concepts of capital structure and the Miller-Modigliani theorems. I would like to close the new contents for this lecture at this point and review the material that we have talked about so far. We began by saying that the total standalone risk for a firm or company is equal to the business risk plus the financial risk. And we mentioned that the business risk stems from the operations and the assets of a firm, whereas the financial risk is created by debt. First of all, we spoke about the fact that business risk can be created or caused by operating leverage. And operating leverage is defined as the fixed costs divided by the total costs. And when a company has high operating leverage, it means that it has a high percentage of fixed costs that are fixed whether or not the company has high sales or low sales, and therefore it has a greater risk for operational losses. We went over two points related to operating leverage. One of them was that companies that have high operating leverage or a high percentage of fixed costs have a higher chance of operating losses, and they also have higher break-even points. In other words, for companies that have high percentage of fixed costs, the amount of sales that they need to make in order to cover their costs is a lot higher than another company which has a lower percentage of fixed costs. So we visualize the effect of operating leverage on the operating losses and the break-even point on the diagram, and we saw this diagram reflected on the graph of the overall costs and revenues versus the quantity of sales. We then also mentioned that the operating leverage increases the level of risk of a company, and we can visualize this in the form of the probability distribution. For companies with higher operating leverage, they have shorter and flatter probability distributions, and even though their risk is higher, their mean or expected return on equity is also higher than for companies that have lower operating leverage. We then spoke about financial leverage, and we mentioned that we are talking now with reference to the financial risk component of the total risk of a firm. We mentioned that financial leverage is the extent to which the total capital of a company is composed of debt. The financial leverage is basically defined as a percentage. So if a company has total assets or liabilities of 1,000 rupees and it has 500 rupees of debt, then it has a financial leverage of 50%. We mentioned that financial leverage has the effect of increasing the average ROE for the company, or the return on equity. And we also mentioned that financial leverage, or increasing the debt, increases the total return to the investors. Keep in mind that the total return to the investors is equal to the net income plus the interest. Why? Because the investors include not just the stockholders, but also the debt holders. So you have to see the bank as a kind of an investor in your company, just the same way that you see stockholders as investors in the company. We mentioned that the effect of financial leverage, of course, means that when you increase the level of debt in the capital, you also change the capital structure or the mix of debt and equity in the company, and this is reflected in the balance sheet. And we mentioned that the financial leverage has an impact which is similar to the operating leverage. In other words, when we talk about a small change in the EBIT or earnings before interest and taxation, it can lead to a very, very large change in the ROE. And this possibility of a large change in the ROE is the element of risk that is created by financial leverage. In financial management, we must always remember that our investors include the equity holders as well as the debt holders. We will continue our discussion of financial leverage in the following lecture, and we will talk more about capital structure theory. I thank you for your kind attention and patience. Aapko Ministry of Science and Technology, Virtual University of Pakistan aur Mubashir Humayun ki taraf se shukriya, khuda hafiz aur assalamu alaikum.